This is the MLW Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger. I'm with my man, Dylan. And Dylan, I never get tired of doing this introduction, and I actually, well, sometimes I mix up the words, but most of the time I can remember what I say at the beginning of the show, because it's been a while. Dylan, how have you been doing?
Strigga, first of all, before we get anywhere further, I'm so happy to be back talking to you on this show. And, you know, when it comes to things going on right now, obviously we've been doing March Madness on the Twitter page. We're all the way up to the Sweet 16.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, there's been some big upsets, too. Some things that I didn't expect. There's been more votes this year than last year, which I expected going in because we've grown a lot on the Twitter from, you know, March 2021 to March 2020. So, I really want to thank everybody out there for their participation, the fun that we've had in that, and I've really enjoyed seeing that as well. And I'm really happy to be back here, String, talking to you. Like I said, we're going to have a lot of fun on this show, too. It's going to be a lighthearted show.
It is. And I want to shout out Rob and WH Park 2 for the March Madness Bracketology, the heavyweight one with WH and the junior one with Rob. I listened to those two shows. I haven't gotten to the Yoshi show yet, but those two bracketologies were really fun. Long shows, but really fun ones. So the time really flies by listening to those different shows, as WH was completely crazy on his one with all the stories he came up with. You and Rob, you have great chemistry with him, so it was just a fun time listening to this.
Yes, please. I completely should say this right away. Thank you guys so much, WH, Rob, and the Jumping Bomb audio guys, Taylor and Aaron. They were all a lot of fun to do. Like you said, WH, he had a lot of fun with his. he was in his own world at times, it felt like. But no, his were a lot of fun, and I just enjoy those shows a lot, and it was great because we kind of haven't done a show in a little while, a couple of weeks or whatever. So those shows really helped, you know, to the listeners out there, you know, that could help pass the time because they were a little long. But considering that it was a good timing, all things considered, because we had some time off, me and you. So we had these extra shows, and all those guys were great. I really enjoyed all three of those shows. I especially enjoyed the Joshi one, actually, because one thing I love, and last year was really good with Joe Lanza, Isaac, that was his first one before he came on our show, obviously. But to do shows with new people, and, you know, Jumping Bomb Audio, I'd never done a show with them before, but we had a lot of fun. It was super cool and intellectual and all that stuff about a lot of these people. And one thing I love, and I think the Eastern Lariat and us in general, but especially those shows, one thing I really love about them is now we could talk about all kinds of different people. Like, you know, there were, you know, deathmatch guys, Sakuda we were talking about. We made a whole big thing me and Rob did on the junior show. You know, the heavyweight bracket, we had Andrew King Takuma in a great matchup. Yes. On that one. So I know that was one of your favorites, String. Andrew King versus Okan in the first round. So I know that was a lot of fun. And like I said, I think that's like the only place you'll get to hear extended talk about some of these names, and it was a lot of fun to dig into those, and I had a great time. And like I said, the March Madness has been really cool so far, nothing too crazy yet. But like I said, some upsets, some different things that I wasn't expecting. If you listen to our preview show, our bracketology, things went a little different, but I was really happy with how that turned out. I'm glad you enjoyed them, and hopefully the listeners did too.
Listen, I think Great Okan versus the Andrew King Takuma is the match that New Japan should do to headline their Tokyo Dome show that they're going to do in, when is it, in May? Yes, in May, I think.
Yes. The May. That should definitely be a Tokyo Dome match, I would say. In a just world, it would be. But unfortunately, You know, there's been no New Japan and 2AW relationship yet. Maybe you have to go all the way back to K-Dojo for stuff like that. But maybe one day, with how New Japan's going, they expect the unexpected with some of these companies. So maybe one day we can see the Andrew King in the New Japan ring.
We'll see about that. But since we're on the topic already, Dylan, New Japan Pro Wrestling has their New Japan Cup running, and you have been doing shows for each day on the Patreon, reviewing the matches, most specifically, of course, the New Japan Cup matches. I gotta say, I'm not too hot about this tournament. First round matches mostly left me not caring that much. There were some exceptions to the rule, but overall, I was not a fan of the first round. The second round, in my opinion, had much better matches to it. I'm not really a fan of this format of having just two or three matches of the cup on each show. Of course, I know that they are doing this to span out the tournament and to do more shows, to make more money off it. Of course, I understand the business side of it, but for me as a fan, I'm not a huge fan of this entire thing, to be quite honest. There have been, as I said, good matches here and there, but in the first round, it mostly left me cold.
You know, it's funny because between the anniversary show, because that happened after our last show, I just thought it was interesting because I felt like after our show, someone must have been listening. Because I like the anniversary show, actually.
Me too.
With Desperado and Ibushi in the main event, I thought they did a really good job. It's like they even made the juniors. Like, that to me was one of the hottest the whole division has been, and especially Desperado, when he won that title, and I think a lot of people might have been a little surprised. They thought it was going to be Phantasmo, and they went with Desperado, and I thought it was a great thing.
By the way, to get this in here, I love how a lot of people are jumping on to the Desperado bandwagon, and I love how many people make the point that they have been on the bandwagon for so long, because, you know, I've been saying this for a long now that this guy deserves much more, and especially since he's got this gimmick and he's got this gimmick working so well, I know I've said this about other guys like Evil, for example, too. But in Desperado's example, I really think that this is really working for him so well now, and he is getting the much deserved praise now, both from the fan side and from the company side.
Absolutely, and I completely agree with you. I was a huge fan of his even when he was a young lion, which was a lot different. He was more like an underdog babyface.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of crazy how things change sometimes. But in Mexico, I was a big fan of his run too, as Namahagwe. I thought he was one of, obviously, Hiromu kind of surpassed him when he went there. But to me, when he came to Mexico, he was like one of the best New Japan guys to come to a Mexican excursion in forever. And to see him in Desperado, I think he's had ups and downs in his career, and probably motivations, and a lot of it, because, you know, they don't really push him that much for a good portion of his career, but now he's getting that praise, starting last year with the Hiromu match at the end of the tournament, the Best of Super Juniors tournament, and now this. I think it was a great move on Gato's part, like I said, because remember, we were really down on the shows, the Castle Attack shows, because we thought Phantasmo was going to win and stuff. And we were like, man, this division sucks. Like, what's going on? And then he wins it, and it's like he came across like a legit main eventer. Not only did he wrestle good, they really did a great job of putting him over.
I'm still sure Phantasmo would have won if Desperado, if Hiromu hadn't been injured.
I think Hiromu would have won in hindsight because they needed a big match for that anniversary show. At the end of the day, like Phantasmo and Ibushi, in hindsight, it's like,
yeah,
maybe we all worked.
Right.
Correct. I think we all worked ourselves a little bit with Phantasmo, like because maybe we were just in a negative mood. Remember the last show we did? It wasn't fun times. No. If you were a Japan fan listening, but I thought, never mind that show, and I thought that was a good show. And I thought the tournament, I liked it better than you, actually. I think I wasn't as down on it. Maybe my expectations were so low that, you know, things went bad. I thought the Okan match with Naito, I thought that was one of Okan's best matches.
Agreed.
I thought that was really good. Shingo and Okada. Now, here's the thing. I saw some people go really wild on that match, like 5 stars in Match of the Year and all that.
Yeah, it was not that great.
Yeah, I thought it was lesser than the G1 match that they had. That was like a match of the year candidate to me. This one was really good, but I actually thought the Shingo and Goto match the next round was just as good, if not better.
If not better, I was just going to say, if not better, because
yeah, I agree
with you that the G1 match was better that Okada and Shingo had. Goto and Shingo, in my opinion, so far, the best match of the tournament, I would say.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. But there were some other good matches. I thought a lot of it was kind of not great. Like, it was kind of okay, good type of deal. I thought the Tenzan match with Ospreay was pretty solid. Kojima and Cobb was another solid first-round match. So you had some good matches. I think that near the end is, like, when things kind of stalled out. When you had, like, the Jay White and Hanare main event. Like, huge disappointment, in my opinion. I know.
Dude,
I'm not a...
No. Yeah. It's really unfortunate because I felt that this was the opportunity for Hanare. And I'm not sure if there is another one of that sort coming anytime soon.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think if he had gotten what he had last year with him versus Ishii in a main event, that would have delivered a lot better. Because remember, in the Jay White match, there was a ton of stalling earlier on.
Yeah, he had to do a Jay White match, of course.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And that kind of killed any kind of momentum. Hanari didn't look great, but I do think that, like I said, if he had been in there versus Ishii or a Goto, I think he would have delivered big, and we would like him a lot better. But I agree with you, like, his chances are not going to be far, they're going to be far and wide, so to speak. That whole show was kind of whack. Like, you had Chase and Finlay, which was okay. like, Yoshihashi and Yujiro, that was okay. That might have been the best one, but it was like, it's not special or anything like that. Later on, we had, like you said, maybe the second round picked up a little bit. I was really surprised that they beat Okan with Yano. I didn't understand
it. That's the thing, the Naito setup was great for Okan, made him look really good, and then he lost to Ruyano.
Yeah, and for what purpose?
For no reason whatsoever.
Like, everyone's immediate defense for that is like, losing to Yano, it doesn't mean anything.
That's the thing, and I think Japan has, because they didn't want to beat Okan in a serious way, because Evil would have beaten him in a serious way.
I don't know. Like, so I just think that Okan losing to Yano, it's like, to me, if the matches don't matter, this is my problem with Yano. It's like, the matches don't matter, the wins and losses don't matter. Why do I care about these matches at the end of the day?
You don't.
Exactly. But to me, the Okan and Naito match, we did care. Or I did. Like, I thought they did a great job of that match. So I don't understand why you would undercut him for no reason. Like you said, maybe he would have lost to Evil in a serious way. So what? He's lost to everybody in a serious way. Tanahashi, Okada, like all of them. Tanahashi twice. Like, everybody thought Okan was going to win that too. Which I totally agree with that. Tanahashi should be the champion. For the record, I thought that was a great booking decision to have Tanahashi retain the title. I don't know.
Yeah, so who is going to win this one? As I'm looking at the brackets, as we're recording this, we have Shingo Takagi at Evil in one semifinal, and then there is still two quarterfinals up as the time of this recording, with Ospreay versus Sanada and White versus Finlay, and I'm eyeing a Shingo Takagi versus Will Ospreay rematch from their junior Best of the Super Junior finals.
I completely agree. I think that's exactly what it's going to be. It's going to come down to Shingo and Ospreay. They have an automatic story with the former final matchup coming against them. I think Shingo beating Okada, and this is funny, we need to go back to that, backtrack a little bit, because we need to talk about this, because we both had the same thought on that match. And you can listen to me on Patreon say this too, by the way. This ain't me just making stuff up. Like, isn't it crazy how this back injury gets reported, and suddenly, it's like magic, Okada suddenly grabbing his back every 5 minutes in the match. He's selling crazy, Shingo's working over his back. Isn't it just a crazy coincidence how that just magically seems to happen? They work this back match immediately after they tell the story where he has to lose to a mid-card guy, where he gets announced that he has an injury all of a sudden, this mysterious injury that has not been mentioned before now.
Yeah. I can't add anything to this. I can't add anything to this. It's just like I said. It's funny how things work.
But the thing is, then the fans are on Twitter, and they're like, oh my god, Okada, how is he doing this? With this horrible back injury, how is he working this match? That New Japan's gone insane, letting him work, he's broken down. It's like, what? Like, wait a minute. Like, wait a minute. Where was this 2 months ago versus Ospreay? Like, you know, at the Dome and all of
and
this.
And you know, we have seen a wrestler work through a serious injury, headlining month after month and having grueling matches month after month in Goshi Ozaki. We just learned this week that he has a torn biceps. He's out for a time. A long time, actually.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying Okada's not injured.
No.
Like, I'm not, like, nobody's saying that. Like, everybody's injured. Like, probably in New Japan, but like he especially, everybody knows he's been hurting. But it's like, it's funny how they, like, they directly pointed to something like this and worked it right into the match, and it's like people went crazy over that, like throwing roses at this guy for, you know, a worked match, you know, at the end of the day, which is still impressive, because that was, you know, like I said, it wasn't as good as the G1 match. Maybe we didn't love it as much as some people, but it was still a really good match. One of the better ones in the tournament. Would you agree with that? Probably a top three or four match.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. So he worked a great match. It's nothing against Okada, and he's had a pretty good year, all things considered. I'm not exactly the biggest Okada fan, but he's had a good year so far with Ospreay and this, you know. I just think that it's interesting how that played out. But anyway, I wanted to mention that because we both had the same thought. Like, I came to you saying that. I was like, oh, what a coincidence. You were like, oh, yeah, I like the same thing. What was the German expression you said? Like, two idiots, one idea?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, in English, it's much more positive than in German, actually.
Yeah, it's like great minds think alike, and in German it's like two idiots and one idea, which I appreciate personally. I appreciate the sassiness of the German language.
We can be idiots, after all, yes.
I definitely can be, so it's okay. But yeah, like we had the same page there, and we're on the same page of this tournament too. I think Shingo and Ospreay is the most natural story, and I think that gives you a believable winner either way, because after Shingo beat Okada, I put it on Twitter. I was like, man, I don't want to do this. I don't want to start believing, because I know I'm going to get disappointed in the end. But to me, logically, he would be the one that I would consider the favorite after beating Okada, and he's the one that makes the most sense to go against Ibushi. I kind of mentioned this like a month or two ago, where I thought maybe, you know, if Ibushi's the champion, maybe he has some kind of voice, and he could say, like, hey, this is a guy I really know I could tear the house down with. Our G1 match was pretty good, but not as great as it could have been. Let's give us a main event for the title, put this guy over, maybe get in Gato's ear a little bit. Or they could go with Ospreay, which is totally on point for New Japan booking. It makes sense with the faction. So I think either of those ideas of Shingo or Ospreay winning are pretty solid, and I think it would be a big match as well.
Yes. What's your estimation? When will they finally pull the trigger on this IWGP World Heavyweight Championship they have been talking about?
Yeah, that's true. They haven't had a new title or anything yet, have they?
No, because they're still running the same story that Naito did, where he wants to separate the belts, but now with Jay White.
That's a totally stupid story, because they announced, like, they didn't do it exactly the same, because they already announced that they combined them. Like, wait a minute. So now suddenly there's a new rule that if you win the title, you could just take them
apart.
They just
make up rules on the fly all the time.
Yeah, like, that's totally illogical. Why would you go through the trouble? And I know that got a pretty negative reaction, especially in Japan. Like, and I think it would have gotten a much better reaction if they hadn't have said, we're erasing the lineage of the title.
That is so crazy to me. John Pollock and W.H. Park talked about that too on the recent post-Pure. So just having this history is worth so much, especially in an environment like Japan, where the wrestling history is so rich and so beloved. And then erasing the history, that is so crazy.
It's totally stupid. It's unnecessary. Who has been calling for this? You know, again, it reminds me of something like WWE would do, like when they say they took the numbers off of WrestleMania.
Right.
Remember?
WrestleMania cowboy hat.
Yes, and pirate
play
ship.
Button. Yeah,
and play button. Yes, of course. So, like, why nobody wanted this? So why would you do this? Imagine if in a real sport this would happen, like Manchester United, like one of the most famous Premier League team. They decided to change their name, change everything, their whole colors and all of that, and they just said all of those titles we won before, they don't count. We're erasing our lineage. And it does not matter anymore. We're starting fresh, and we need new fans and a new era and all of this.
Yeah, especially in European football, history is so important to a lot of fans and supporters. It's the sports system here is different from the US, where you have franchises and they happen to go from city to city. That doesn't happen in Europe.
Even in America, like if the Boston Celtics, if the NBA decided we're going to change our name to the Boston Pharaohs, or whatever.
Yeah.
And we're going to erase all of our titles that we won for 75 years, and they don't count anymore because we need a new era. That would be stupid. Like, everyone would hate that. And the thing is, history is important in wrestling, too, because you can always call back to that. You know, that lineage, that, to me, when I first started watching New Japan, one of the best things to me was the title history they would play before all the title matches with all the former champions that popped up. That made it seem so prestigious and cool. So now what? They're going to do a new one and it's just going to have Ibushi's face?
How convenient was it that Pro Wrestling Noah put up a history video of their title lineage?
That was awesome. That was awesome. Totally great counter programming from Noah there. So yes, I love that. But it was so nonsensical, and I think that would have avoided a lot of the controversy of that whole thing if they would have just said, "Okay, we're doing away with the IC title, and it's going to be one title from now on." I think people would have reacted fine to that. But when you say, "Well, all the stuff back to Inoki and all of that doesn't count anymore," then everyone was like, "What?" You know, pretty much. So that ruined everything, and now they're trying to do this story with Jay White where now he can separate the title, and he was cutting promos on Tanahashi where he was saying, I will preserve your lineage. Apparently Tanahashi can't do this, but Jay White can.
Jay White can, yes.
He's the only one allowed. There's a provision in his contract. But yeah, just totally nonsensical storytelling, and that's still there. But I will say, just to round this all up again, I think the tournament's been a step forward from where they were a month ago. Like, those invasion or castle attack shows were so... Like, my opinion on New Japan was pretty low at the point, but I think they've taken a step forward in a good direction. Not too great. I'm not saying it's like the greatest tournament of all time, but I think it's been somewhat enjoyable to see all this play out, and hopefully they can tie it together with a good win, even though there's been some dumb stuff and some messy booking along the way.
But actually, that's a good tagline for the tournament overall. Somewhat enjoyable.
Yeah, yes, exactly. But to me, I was super down on them a month ago. So somewhat enjoyable is a step forward for me.
It is. So we talked about the championship in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And for the most part, this edition of the Eastern Lariat is the championship edition, because we are going to browse through some other companies and their title scenes on this episode. Not going to do a deep dive into singular shows or anything, just looking at the title scene in different organizations. And I want to go to DDT at first, Dylan, with their recent show, Daydream Believer 2021, which was headlined by Yuki Ueno versus Yusuke Okada for the DDT Universal title. And the biggest kick that I got out of the match, besides the match being very good, was that this show, by a small margin, but it outdrew the All Japan show on the same day. So Yusuke Okada headlining, DDT outdrew All Japan.
I didn't even think about that, but how about that? How tides have turned over the years, man. How happy must that guy be right now?
Imagine when you look at his Twitter and the pictures he posts, he is the happiest guy right now on Twitter, overall.
Imagine if he had stayed in All Japan. Like, in DDT,
I refuse to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in DDT, he's a main eventer. And if he had stayed in All Japan, he would have been goofing around with Rising Hayato, on there. It would have been a totally different thing. No disrespect to Rising Hayato, a very fine young wrestler, but still, there's a big difference between the second match on the show and main event status for a title in what, to me, That is probably my match of the year so far. I thought it was so great.
Wow.
Between Ueno and Okada. Yeah, I thought it was better than their first match. I thought it was an incredible performance from Okada. I thought Okada, by the way, I thought he actually outshined Ueno a little bit in this match, which is very surprising. Yeah, and I think it might have been designed that way as well, to help get Okada over that much more as a true, you know, upper-tier guy. Everybody knows how much I love Ueno if you've listened to this show. I've always been on that guy's bandwagon, and he totally proved it last year with Nautilus, with the singles run, with this title run. He's already looking like one of the best champions in the country. Like you said, we don't need to deep dive into everything, but to me, this was just an incredible match and one of my favorites of the years, if not my number one match at this point. I loved it, and I thought it was completely awesome.
Love it. I thought it was very good. I might go check it out again because you love it so much. We have it rated at 8.84 on Cage Match, which is really high too. So yeah, I might just watch it again because these are two wrestlers that I can't get enough of either. So yeah, we'll see about my enjoyment if that goes up here.
Even if it's not a match of the year for you, you still loved it. It was still a
great match. Yeah, it was.
So, definitely. You know, if a match is 4 stars or 5 stars, it's still a great match. You know, at the end of the day, you know, like either way. So yeah, I might have loved it a little more. Maybe I'm on the high end, but that's cool. Like I said, I think everybody would have something. To me, this reminded me of that Takeshita and Akiyama match from last year.
Wow.
That kind of went under the radar. And especially, I think maybe even a little more so in this day of age, because I think a lot of wrestlers work more this style than the Akiyama style. So I think if you're working this style, this is like a great example of a match you should watch if you're a wrestler and work this kind of style with these guys, because I think you can learn a lot from, especially Okada. I think that guy is like a wrestling genius deep down. I saw it in the documentary All Japan produced last year. It's like this guy just understands wrestling through and through, and Ueno's looking like he could be a great talent for DDT. I just thought it was a great match that everybody should look at, and if you wrestle this style especially, I think that's something you should look at, because I think you will take something from it to help, you know, to really grow.
Yeah, absolutely. Two more title matches on this show from March 14. Damnation, Sumo Takao, Tetsuya Endo, and Yuji Hino defeated Akito, Katsuki Hirata, and Shota for the DDT KOD 6-man tag team title. I was very sad about this.
Well, it sucks because Akito and Hirata and Shota lose the titles. And I agree with you, because I love that team too. Akito and Hirata, like, you know, Shota, he's had one of the best years of his career in the last year. But the other two I've been fans of for a long time. You know, Shota I don't necessarily have that same relationship with, although I've liked his run in Gambari Pro. And moving up to DDT, getting some spotlight, getting a lot more love than he would have had. And now with this title reign, they're a fun team. I think Hirata and Akito are two of the more underrated guys, especially Hirata, I think, gets labeled as a comedy guy, which, you know, these titles aren't exactly, you know, the match seriousness or anything like that. But still, they're a fun team to watch. And, you know, I like Yuji Hino. Endo and Soma are okay. You know, I'm not their biggest fans, but they're not terrible or anything like that. But I definitely prefer the other team in terms of fun, I would say.
Fun was had in the third title match on the show, too, with the DDT Extreme title on the line in a barbed wire casket death match, which was won by Chris Brooks. He dethroned Shunma Katsumata. Very unfortunate thing for Katsumata. He got caught in the casket while doing a Stuka Splash. Great coordination. Great finish, too. Well, the Extreme title changes. It's a fun title, too, to follow around.
Yeah, a rematch of our March Madness round. And Shunma won in the March Madness poll. And Brooks won
the
Extreme
title.
It's a close
one, as you and Rob said.
Yes, the fans rode behind Shunma, however, at the end of the day. And Brooks ended up getting the title back in revenge. So their next match will be an unofficial tiebreaker. That was my takeaway, but it was a crazy match. Shunma, he's been doing a lot of crazy stuff lately. He had the match with Mao and all of that, so it's like you're getting this hardcore style now that DDT has put into their shows with it, and you know, if you're a fan of that, then you know, I think you might have liked this. It was okay to me. Like I said, I appreciate that they really put it on the line, but this really isn't my favorite style anyway. We've seen so many plunder matches in my life. So that's the kind of thing. That's the problem. It's not necessarily anything they did wrong. It's a Dylan thing that I didn't like it that much, but it was still okay. Like, I appreciated their effort.
I tend to zone out for those matches too.
Yeah, even the match versus Mao, I'm kind of over all of these. It's like a ladder match in American wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, on the last show, the AEW show, they had that's a whole other hardcore thing, the main event of that, which I did talk about on Patreon, by the way.
Yes, of course.
I had a lot to say about that. But like, there was a ladder match on that show with like six guys, crazy spots, a Canadian destroyer onto the ladder and all that. It's like, to me, I've seen all this so many times that it's like you said, I think you described it perfectly. Sometimes we just zone out of these kind of matches.
Yeah, for these ladder matches, I just don't really pay that much attention. Especially when I got a six or a seven way, where I know that there is not going to be a great story threat or anything. Well, they got that one with Cody and the injury, but everything else in that match was basically just doing stuff.
Yeah, like the first Money in the Bank match, though, the first time they did this big multi-man ladder match. That match inspired me to wrestle, like, pretty much. Like, I thought that was like the greatest match of all time when it happened. But nowadays, if they did that same match, I would be totally, like you said, I'd be like, I'm not really going to pay that much attention to this.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's a great ladder match, just like this with the Extreme title, it's like, even if it's a great version of this, I can't really invest myself that much into it. So you can't really take what I say except with a grain of salt, because I'm so desensitized to all of this right now.
You really have to go out on a limb these days to make these kind of matches really work, and sometimes it can get really dangerous because a lot of stuff has been done, so maybe toning it down for a while and then returning for the eventual deathmatch would be a better way to go with. But they do have this Extreme title, and they are going with it.
Here's what they need to do. Have a desert death match with cactuses and scorpions, and that will get me right into it.
I need to look something up, because the Brahman brothers have been doing matches. I have to search the name, actually. Yes.
We all need more Brahman brothers in
yes.
our lives.
Yes, the Brahman brothers have been doing death matches that were called Tokyo Desert Man on the Verge of Homelessness Death Match.
I don't know if that's what I had in mind. but interesting match type there. Interesting names. That's the kind of matches I want to see. Like, something crazy. Like, bring back the apartment wrestling like that DDT did back in the day with Ibushi and all that. Have them fight through an apartment of people for the Extreme title. The last one that walks out of that building is the champion.
Yeah. Big props to you, by the way, for shoehorning the cactus onto this show.
Had to bring the cactus. I could not go without the cactus on there. Cactus, no life.
More chaos happened in the prelude match to the KOD Openweight title match. Kazusada Higuchi and Yukio Sakaguchi versus Jun Akiyama and Makoto Oishi ended in a double count out. And this is going to be the headlining match for Judgment 2021 for DDT on March 28th. Jun Akiyama defending the KOD title against Katsusada Higuchi. Except for a great match, Dylan, what are you expecting?
I think that Akiyama will retain. I think it's a little early to end this title reign, but I think that Higuchi is going to look so good, because if you look at Akiyama's title reign, and just reign in DDT so far, just to, his run in general, he's done an excellent job of putting over everyone around him and making them better. So I think we're going to see that with Higuchi. I honestly, my expectations are sky high for this match, because I'm a big fan of Higuchi. Again, that's somebody I know we both have always really liked, but I think a lot of people have. It's not like some crazy hot take. Higuchi, he's always been pretty good. and actually really good. So I think that, honestly, my expectations are through the roof. I think this could be Higuchi's best match of his whole career with Akiyama.
I have high expectations too, so I'm really looking forward to this show that's going to happen on March 28. And looking down the card, Dylan, again going to the title scene, there is a 24th anniversary special singles match on that card as well, with Harashima going against Yukio Sakaguchi. of course, Higuchi's stablemates. So having Akiyama win in this situation, of course, Higuchi is going to be accompanied to the ring by Sakaguchi. He could be the next challenger.
And that would be a really cool match, too, if they do that. I think that would be something a lot of people would be into, and I think that would be a great stylistic matchup as well.
Yes, absolutely. And, of course, a Harashima versus Jun Akiyama match would be down in the pipeline as well. So there's a lot of great matches that this Akiyama reign has left.
Absolutely. There's a lot of gas left in the tank of that. That is, you know, I think Higuchi will have his day one day. They've done a good job in the last year. For a while, I thought, man, Higuchi, like, they don't really do enough with him. But the last year or so, I think they've done a really good job of putting him up there to that main event tier.
Yes, yes. And they're doing that very cautiously with Higuchi. Eventually, as you said, he's going to get there. If he stays for the long run, he's going to be on top eventually and battle with the likes of Konosuke Takeshita in the future much more. Looking forward to that.
Absolutely.
So let us move over to the second promotion under the Cyber Fight banner with Pro Wrestling Noah. They had two big shows, one in Yokohama and one in Fukuoka in the last 2 weeks. And there have been some changes. And Dylan, of course, we got to start with something that I named the Junior Ping Pong Continues. Atsushi Kotoge is the new Junior Heavyweight Champion.
I didn't see this coming.
I guess nobody did. I was caught off guard by that.
Well, it really doesn't. I don't understand why Kotoge couldn't have just beaten Harada at the Budokan Hall show if that was what.
Because they are friends again, remember?
Well, of course. That means so much in Noah, the junior division. But, you know, they could have done it.
It means that Harada has to turn on Kotoge now to regain the championship, right?
That could very well be where they go with
That's
this.
That's absolutely going to happen.
Yeah. Like, the thing is, they've had matches before, like, you know, a long time ago, like back in the old days, you know, 2014-15, when Kotoge was champion and Harada was champion. They had friendly matchups before. They could have done that again, but, like, Yoshioka, it's like they literally picked this guy who had been doing nothing all year and suddenly put him in the Budokan, you know, biggest match of the division, put him over. It was a great moment and a really good match. And then they just take it away a month later, and to whose benefit? I wonder, because I don't know. I mean, Yoshioka got that moment, but just to take it away a month later seems like a real missed opportunity. And Kotoge, I love him. I think he's a great wrestler. And I like that match a lot, too, by the way, that Kotoge and Yoshioka match. I thought it was really good, and both men worked really hard. One of the best finishes that I've seen all year with the kill switch, the great bump Yoshioka took. I thought it was a great match, but the booking of it leaves a lot to be desired. Even though I love Kotoge, like I said, I'll never complain about him being champion because I know he'll have a lot of great matches. But it felt like this was Yoshioka's chance to be elevated, and I don't know if that really happened with this reign.
Yeah. Very weird timing as well, since Yoshioka won it in Budokan and had this great moment, and the first match back, he loses the title. Makes him kind of look like a goof.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Like, why didn't Kotoge just beat Harada then? Yeah. You could have Yoshioka's moment later. And it really doesn't make a lot of sense because they told a good story with it where it was like, okay, Muto's the heavyweight champion. Right. I can win it. And we're like, you know, Wrestle One buddies unite to win the championships. And then it's like, well, that went away after a month. And like you said, it makes Yoshioka look kind of like a goof. But I will say, I think if people were sleeping on him because he really didn't do anything for the majority of his Noah run, pretty much all of it until Budokan, I think the last two matches, and Kotoge and Harada are two of the best workers, but still, he totally stepped up and had great performances. So I think people now at least recognize that about him a little bit more, that maybe didn't see him in Wrestle 1. But still, overall, like you said, I don't think he benefited from this that much at the end of the day to take it away so soon.
Someone who benefited greatly from being in a tag team with Takashi Sugiura was Kazushi Sakuraba. At first, we didn't really know what this tag team would be like, but in the end, this buddy story between Sugiura and Sakuraba, or Sugi and Saku, was one of the greatest stories going in Pro Wrestling Noah for the last couple of months, and the absolute highlight of that, Dylan, was the video package before the GHC Tag Team title match 2 weeks ago.
They were just hanging out, sitting down together, having drinks. Where were they anyway? What did that look like to you if they were sitting?
It looked like just a rooftop garden.
Yeah,
somewhere.
Where was that? On top of a hotel?
Something like that.
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, this is a beautiful moment of brotherhood and friendship. Unfortunately, they had to lose the titles afterwards. But I disagree with you. We are you used that very loosely. Me, I thought that team was awesome from the beginning because I loved Sakuraba's singles run last year and the N1. And I think this tag team, I had total confidence that they would. And Sugera is like the best, you know, like to me. He's a guy that could never do any wrong. So I had full faith this team would be great. And they totally have. I love this title reign, the storytelling, the matches. It's all awesome. Like, I honestly thought they were like their titles were the highlight of the company in a lot of ways. And I think that's something Noah has capitalized on. Remember, even on that Budokan show, we both agreed that the tag match with Kiyomiya and Inamura was the best match on the show. Right. So I think that this tag run that Noah's on right now, they're the ones carrying the company because it's not the main event, obviously. And the juniors, they're good matches, but they're all in disarray because of booking. So to me, the tag division has been the best booked. It's been the best matches. And I've really loved their run. And I think Sakuraba especially is kind of underrated because of his age. But you got to remember this guy, he is still so fresh that helps people. Regardless of that, he's old. He still has a lot of fresh matches. And I think that's a lot of things a lot of people underrate, I think, when they talk about age or whatever. It's like your age and your age on the public eye are two different things. And in a company is two different things. So I really think he did a great job. Go back and watch his singles run in N1 last year and watch his tag run. And I thought this match was spectacular, by the way, this tag title match with the aggression.
And him and Sugiura are basically the same age, 1 year apart. Masato Tanaka on this card, 48 years old. Shinjiro Otani is going to be in the champion card and is going to have great matches at 48 years old, too. Mochizuki, 50 years old, too. So age, in a lot of ways, in wrestling is a number when it comes to the ring, of course. We're going to talk about another one who's older than these guys that I just mentioned, of course, too. But I want to stick with the GHC tag team title for a bit. Because, as I said, the run that Sakuraba and Sugiura had was great. The match itself, 33 minutes. Imagine Sakuraba in a 33 minutes match. And the match is rated 8.75 on Cage Match. In my opinion, a great match as well here. And I really, really like the story they've been telling in the last couple of months with the aggression. Getting back together, of course, the focus somewhat has been on Katsuki Nakajima because he is the bigger part or the more important part of this tag team, if you look at it. But in recent months, they've been building up Masaki Tamiya very strong. He has had a pinfall victory over Takashi Sugiura 2 before, and now they went to this grueling finish that I didn't really like, to be quite honest, because, of course, for Katsuyori Shibata reasons, when Masaki Tamiya did a shoot headbutt on Sugiura and split himself open, and that looked really, really bad. And he got the win by referee stoppage. He had Sugiura in the prison lock. But after all, the aggression is back together. They are GHC Tag Team Champions. You had these reservations about them getting back together. But then again, Dylan, it's what you said, that the tag team title is really in the main focus in Pro Wrestling NOAH. They are having great matches about it. And now one of the best tag teams, one of the best natural tag teams, like WH called it too, are back together and they are on top again.
Yeah, my reservations were more about Nakajima not being a main eventer, like level talent. But he's done a great job with this tag title run. You know, I think that they have a lot of potential between each other. I think Nakajima's been awesome for a long time now. It's not just like he suddenly got good. You know, he's always been really great. And Kitamiya, I mean, imagine where he's been at for like 1 year ago to now. I mean,
different
totally,
guy.
Yeah, totally different. You know, when he was just a random guy in Congo, to me, he didn't have any star power at all. He was, like, completely interchangeable with Taniguchi, in all honesty.
Yeah, it felt he had no self-esteem either because he was just a guy.
Exactly. He was literally just a guy. And now, in this tag team, like this gives him a whole new lease on life, makes him relevant again, and I think it's a great thing for him. You know, like whatever reservations I had, they've totally gone against that and done better than I thought with this just this one match already. Kidami is already in line for a title shot. I thought that finish was absolutely unbelievably spectacular. Like, I know that some people are going to get queasy about it because it's a very violent move and dangerous, but to me, that made him more over, like, and famous. Like, that headbutt, like, totally took off. Everybody couldn't believe it when they saw it. It was, like, a totally eye-catching finish, and he headbutted him, he busted himself open, and he screamed out for, like, with his primal rage. He looked like a superstar to me. Like, that's the first time I've ever seen him look like a star like that to me.
I never seen so much Masasaito in him than in this situation.
Yeah, and like it was totally badass. Like honestly, like he just knocked out Sugira, like completely, maybe for real, for all we know, with that crazy ass headbutt. It's like, you know, like the blood coming down his face. He yells out, screams. Like I just thought, man, this guy looks like a superstar. And like if you'd said like 5 months ago, like not even 5 months ago, like a month ago, I'd have been like, he's just a guy. Like you know, like there's no real future for him in any kind of main eventer. Like he's a fine worker, but not anything special. But after like when this match ended, I was like, okay, this guy, like they have something with him. Like, and I haven't fought that in a long time with him. So to me, I really thought that it was a great finish for him. I get that some people will have reservations, you know, but at the end of the day, I just thought it was a great moment for him to look like a superstar. And I thought the whole match was great. Like I said, I thought everything about it was really good. The Nakajima and Sakuraba interactions, the Sugera. So like I said, Sugera, it's not even worth saying anymore. He's always great, no matter what he does. And I'm sure that he is, you know, I'm thankful that everybody's okay. There's not anything crazy, no injuries. That was in the main event of the next show, unfortunately, that someone would get injured. But everyone seems to be okay, so I'm totally fine with it. I think it was awesome.
Very unfortunate is that Masaki Tamiya is going to be the next one falling to GHC Heavyweight Champion Keiji Muto.
Kiyomiya has been the one to meet that fate, and I don't know what you want, what you have to say about the match, but it was a Keiji Muto match.
Well, first of all, I would have loved if Noah had done one show, because they had two very long ones. The first one, I guess, I think was like 3.5 hours, and the second one was closer to 4 hours. So most of the undercards were really not that newsworthy.
Are you telling me you would switch out that Yone versus Saito match?
I actually watched it, Dylan, believe it or not.
Yone in a new tag team. Now you have to watch
What the fuck is going on with Shuhei Taniguchi being in a disco tag team with Mohamed Yone? I couldn't believe it.
Well, I mean, where do you go? you know, where else do you go than the disco tag team? It's either this or he's going back to Maybach. those are the options.
Those are the options? Like, oh, God.
Well, that's the thing. Like, the funny thing is, I actually like him a lot as a worker. Like, I think he's kind of underrated because people only remember the bad stuff with Maybach. But I think if you actually watch his matches now, and like for the last couple of years, he's been really good. But again, he's in the same place Kidamiya was. You know, it's like he's just a guy on the roster. He's like, there's no real hope for him as a main eventer. So now he does this goofy team with Yone, and maybe they could get out of, you know, taking as few bumps as possible in their match. Replace the bumps with the disco poses. That is their strategy of wrestling. They're the opposite of Kidamiya. Kidamiya is doing shoot headbutts, and Taniguchi's like, man, screw that. I just want to do my disco.
Well, let's be happy they didn't pair Masaki Tamiya with Mohamed Yone, gave him a disco gimmick.
That could have been his fate if they had not done this Nakajima deal. He could have followed up. They could have been a faction.
Who else is there on the Noah roster there who has nothing to do with that could join in with a disco gimmick? Let's look at the roster.
Kendo Kashi.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
the immediate name. He had his time.
Before we go to the Muto match, what did you think about the Kenno and Kendo Kashi match?
Oh, utter nonsense.
But yeah. The crowd really loved it.
But that's what you expect of it, you know? Right. Like I said, it wasn't like a great match like or anything like that. Nobody's saying that. But for a goofy mid-card type of match, it was fine. Like honestly, it wasn't like... It definitely was a lot different than the shoot-style matches or whatever of the past. But, you know... It was just goofy mid-card fun at the end of the day, which is a little disappointing because I think the title's been built up really well with this Kenno reign. But for a one-show type of deal, I can get behind this. And obviously the next match is going to be, who knows what it's going to be with Fujita. You know, they ended up stepping on top of Kendo, the defeated and beaten down Kendo Kashin after the match. Fujita came out, just stepped on top of him and was like, I'm challenging next. And Kendo was like, oh yeah, I'm like, face me, bitch. And he was like, he put his foot on his Kendo Kashin's chest too. They had their little stare down. So a great finishing segment. I thought it was amusing, but yeah, I wouldn't say it was
great. It was more of a life match, to be quite honest, than a match that you would highly enjoy on video, because the audience that at points they really laughed out loud. Yeah, they had a good time. So you mentioned it, Katsuyuki Fujita challenging Kenno for the national title. On commentary, Stuart Fulton and Mark Pickering mentioned that Kenno has been champion for quite a while now, over 200 days. So could this reign come to an end now, Donald? I could see Katsuyuki Fujita winning this title.
Yeah, I thought he was in danger of losing it to Funaki at Budokan, but that didn't happen. And, you know, I don't think anybody expected Kashin to win the title here. Hopefully not, anyway. Fujita, definitely a more legitimate challenger. I could see it, too, because he is kind of like, who else is left after...
Yeah, like, and who else is a better buddy to Nosawa Rongai?
Well, that too. That obviously plays a big role in the champions of Noah right now. Fujita's okay. Like I said, I don't mind Fujita. Honestly, he's a fine old guy, hard hitter worker. Sometimes he can get into the goofy stuff. We saw that stare down match last year, which was famous. If anything else, it did get over.
And in a totally goofy manner, they tried to recreate the stare down with Kenno and Fujita. They just shouldn't have done that.
I hope that they don't get any ideas about doing like that in the match, is all I have to say.
My guess is, Dylan, they just wanted to do that to see how it comes off in front of an audience.
Well, we said at the time that wouldn't work. If you go back to a year ago when that match happened, we said like this could only happen in an empty arena and be successful anyway. I do not suspect that will be a main event caliber match in front of fans if they stand around for 30 minutes. But regardless, I think if they have a hard hitting, like more along the lines of Kenno's other matches in this title reign, like a 7, 8, maybe 10 minute match, hard hitting, all action type of deal, I think it could be good. But, you know, I would prefer greatly that Kenno would be the champion than Fujita, honestly. I don't think that, especially now with Muto also as heavyweight champion, I think it's a really bad look to have.
Yeah. Yeah, the combination isn't good.
Yeah, just the aesthetics of it is bad.
Right, but, you know, in a perfect world, the perfect world is, of course, not Fujita winning the title, but...
I was about to say, huh?
let's say that he has won the title. In a perfect world, the one winning the title in the end, defeating Katsuyuki Fujita, could be Yoshiki Nomura. Because remember, that was his first opponent coming into Pro Wrestling Noah back then, that where my criticism of that got me a lot of heat on Twitter, and in a way deservingly so for the words that I used back then. But still, though, Fujita beat Inamura, of course, in his first match in Noah in a very short fashion. And like 6 months from now, when they have built up Yoshiki Nomura in a good manner, he could be a legitimate challenger to Katsuyuki Fujita to dethrone him for the national title. Problem here is, Dylan, Katsuyuki Fujita, he won't even do jobs for Super Tiger in Real Japan Pro Wrestling.
Isn't that the problem with a lot of these guys right now?
Yeah.
Not wanting to do jobs? Yeah, like that's a serious problem. If you have a champion who doesn't want a job to anyone,
yeah.
I would say that's not a good thing to have if you were a booker of a company. But Inamura, that would be a great win for him if he could beat him. It's just a matter of getting him to play ball. Maybe they Nosawa's going to make a call to the Cyberfight offices and say, we need to double Fujita's salary to get him to drop this title, or else we don't really know what we're going to do. So please give us money.
That's right. Think about the first step off the second one.
I don't know if he does that a lot. I own Nosawa based on some of his booking. It seems like he has a plan for one thing, and then the after, it's like, let's cross that bridge when we get to it.
Well, let's get to it, to the meat of
this. Let's cross this bridge that we're about to get to.
Crossing another bridge, but not sure how stable this bridge is.
I want to jump off this bridge.
Keiji Muto. He still is the GHC heavyweight champion. Of course, nobody really could, in all seriousness, expect that Keiji Muto would lose the title in his first title defense after his big win in Budokan. And it's unfortunate because with New Japan, we talk a lot about their habit of booking matches that neither guy should lose. And, well, you can't really say this here, but it's definitely a match that Kiyomiya shouldn't have lost, and we know that Muto wouldn't have lost it. So it's a bit similar too. But for Kiyomiya, I don't know. This the first one made him look real bad, I thought, because he had to sell this offense to this guy that didn't have much singles matches in recent years. Now, of course, he had this big match with Shiozaki and won it. But still, this one, it was a lot about holds on the ground, about rest holds on the ground. And in the end, Muto came up on top, and again, can't say that Kiyomiya looked good in this.
There's so much to unpack in this match. Like, so many mystifying things, I feel like. First you said that nobody could really expect him as seriously, but I don't know if that's true. I think some people did think that Kaito was going to win this match.
I know, but I think that most people that thought that just wanted to believe that because they couldn't wrap their head around the idea that Muto would beat Kiyomiya again. But I could.
I definitely could.
I set it out as a rule on one of our last shows. Always expect the worst from Keiji Muto.
I think one of your shining moments in this podcast, like one of your greatest points you've ever made was that. And, to me it seems even ridiculous to even argue what you said about him looking bad. Of course he looked bad. This guy's a 58-year-old man that can barely even walk, let alone wrestle.
That's the point. As I said, that age can be a factor in wrestling, but it doesn't have to. It can be a number. We see it with guys that are in their early 50s that are still great. Keiji Muto, he just has a body that has had a lot of mileage and can't really do much anymore.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw it, even when he tries to do Shining Wizard, it's almost painful to watch. Like his own signature moves, like that
it used to be this flashy move.
Yeah.
And now the opponent has to remain like in this seated position, this kneeled position for a long time for Muto to do it. The impact of the move and the mystique of the move came from its explosiveness and from its flashiness, but that's gone.
Absolutely. He can't really do the moonsault anymore.
He shouldn't.
Yeah, he shouldn't. He still tries. I'm not going to take away his effort. He tries to do stuff, but yeah, like look at that gif that got really popular on the 7th show where he did the cartwheel into the elbow in the corner where it was just sad.
I'm not sure about this. My mom, she has an artificial knee joint. And she can't even kneel anymore properly. So I don't even want to imagine how hard it must be to do a cartwheel with two artificial knee joints and not get seriously injured. I mean, he has to be hurting a lot.
Absolutely. I feel bad for him in some ways, but at the end of the day, it's like, why is he put in this position? Why does he want to be in this position? I don't know. At the end of the day, like, to me, it's not even mildly amusing to watch him. Like, it's kind of sad, actually.
Yeah, it's not that I'm anti Keiji Muto. I'm pretty much indifferent to him being the champion because, well, that's what I expected. But as you said, it's not a good look. It's sad to watch in parts. This match got a rating of 5.85. It was a very low average match.
Yeah,
on the lower end of average, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, Kaito really tried his best here. I got to give Kaito some credit. Just like Go last month.
Muto actually gave him much. He got a kick out of two Shining Wizards.
Yeah, he did. That is a good point to the match where they did at least give him a little bit. But for like this style of match, for a main event level match, and this is a 32-minute match, by the way, Muto and Kaito. And it's like, you know, that's going to be really hard for Muto to be doing this kind of style. And like I said, Kaito busted his ass to make this work. But for me, like I said, this could not be less entertaining for me. Like, honestly, like on a personal level, I think this is more like a one, like level match, like a zero or a one. But for what it tried to accomplish, it might be maybe a five, a four or five maybe on there. But,
I would probably give it a four. Or five, not sure, but as I said, lower end of average.
Yeah, that's fair. But like to me, it's hard for me to watch him, honestly. And to be honest with you, I'm just gonna be real with you. I was never that big of a fan of his anyway. like even in his
prime. We know that.
yeah, like even in his prime. Like we remember we did a thing on Patreon for his first title reign, and a lot of those matches, I was like, man, like this really wasn't that great. There were a couple that I liked. You know, the match with Sting I thought was really good. This is like 1993 Muto at this point. You know, so he had some good matches, and obviously 2001, a
couple of years ago, 1993.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah, only what, 30 years ago? in 2001, I thought he had some big matches. We reviewed that for Nagata's deal. We had Nagata and Muto in the G1 final. That was a great match. I thought that was like one of the best G1 finals. So yeah. He's had his moments over the years. I'm not going to say that he's like this terrible worker, like he's never any good. But like, you know, to me, I never really got into him as much as some of the others, like Hashimoto and Nagata and all of that. So to me, he doesn't even have that legend influence. I guess if you're like a really big fan of Muto, you could take some kind of pleasure in him being champion. But like when you watch him and he's struggling to do basic moves, I feel like even if I was a fan, like imagine, okay, like if 10 years from now, Sugira's still wrestling and this is what we get from him, I'm not going to be like, oh man, like Sugira put the title on him. I'm going to be like, man, like, this sucks. Like, you know, it's like kind of, okay, a comparison. This is obviously, this guy is better, and his match versus Shingo obviously was really good. But it's the same kind of feeling, I said this on Patreon the other day, the same kind of feeling I get for Kenta now when I watch him. Like, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, you know, when he was like my original OG favorite in Japan. I loved him so much, loved his matches, always hyped. And when I watch him now, even back when he had that match with Marufuji at Marufuji's anniversary show, yeah, Flight, it's like when I watch him now, it's like, man, this guy is such a shell of himself that even though I know that there's some enjoyment to be had, maybe some good in this, I can't enjoy it because I hate watching this guy who used to be like the best, and now he's like super mid-tier at best and actually kind of lower, and Muto is not even that. It's like he's lower than mid-tier at this point. So it's like, it's just, even if you're a fan of his, I guess I just don't understand what the good of this is. You know, they did all right. They got 1,200 people at Fukuoka. 1,236 to be exact. Thank you, cagematch.net. What a wonderful website that is. So, you know, they did all right in terms of the draw. You know, this match had some interest. So you can't completely hand wave it completely, but to me, I wonder, this is something that we're going to have the final result on a year from now, probably, maybe even longer, because there's a chance that this could do long-term damage to someone like Kaito, like losing again and again to this old guy, goes hard work. Like I said, I think it took down his title reign. He's going to be gone for a while. It's like, this could do some damage. Maybe it won't do anything. Maybe it'll actually be good. Maybe they'll draw some new fans, and they'll be able to take that into some momentum. But to me, I fear what this all is going to do a year or two down the road to these young guys like Kaito and Masakita Miya and whoever else they put in front of them.
Me too, because they really have to be cautious about what's next for Kaito Kiyomiya. And the question is, will this actually be the end of Keiji Muto's reign? Will Kaito Kiyomiya be the one to dethrone him in the end? I'm questioning this now because, as you said, this could be a long-term reign. And Kiyomiya has lost to him twice now. It would require a lot of build-up for him, a lot of guys to overcome and a lot of matches to win for him to be recognized as a credible challenger to Keiji Muto ever again. And I don't see that in 3 or 4 months down the line. Maybe even not in 6 months down the line. And the Keiji Muto reign probably is going that distance. But is Kaito going to be the end of this? What do you think?
I think that's the only logical end.
Yes, it is, but is it going to happen?
But is it going to happen is a completely different question, unfortunately. I fear that this title reign is going to go all the way past the N1, and maybe that's how they build Kaito up.
You know, like, my question is, with this, Keiji Muto has signed a 2-year contract with Noah. Mm-hmm. What is he going to do after losing the title? Is he just going to go back to the 6 months? The 8 months?
It's or, Alliance, baby.
Or is this title run really going longer than we all think it is?
That's always a possibility. Like, to put the title on Muto is something I don't think a lot of people would have wanted to do or do, you know, for any reason, whether he's your friend or whatever. So to put it on him means you have to have some kind of confidence and faith in him. For business purposes, for match purposes, I don't know. Like, but for whatever reason, they must have had some kind of faith in him. So if they see, like, let's say next month, at the end of next month versus Kita Miya, let's say that does a good number in, you know, these times. Obviously, things are not normalized where everything's open. But right. Still, let's just say that they do above average, like they did with this show.
I mean, there is a degree to what you can call good numbers. For example, yeah. The first day of Castle Attack was obviously a complete disaster.
Yeah, that was not good at all.
So you can make comparisons there.
Yeah, but whatever their expectations are, I guess, if they shoot above them somehow with all of this. We don't know that. We don't have the data that they have and the numbers they think and their expectations and that fuel their decision making. So we're only speculating, but let's just say they did a better number than they thought, and they do it every time with Muto, and this goes on and on for all across the summer. To me, I feel like there has to be an end game at some point for this title reign. I can only, like I said, to me, even it going past N1 is too long. Like, so I feel like that would be really long and just not a good look at all for the company if that were to happen. But I kind of get that feeling right now because I agree with you. I think ideally you would want a big show match. Remember the show that they're going to have with DDT? The combined show and Gunbar mm-hmm. Pro and all that? The Cyber Fight big show? Ideally, you would want to have that be the place you could crown your new champion. But to have Kaito challenge already,
no,
that kind of takes that, you know, that, like, yeah, exactly. You know, that takes that bullet out of the chamber.
What about the idea that WH Park had on Post Purezo, where he mentioned, of course, they said that all titles will be on the line on this big Cyber Fight show. How about Jun Akiyama defeating Keiji Muto for the GHC title?
That would be a worthy main event for the show, and a great result to have Akiyama return to Noah. So that, to me, I think that would ease a lot of the tensions, but I still worry about Kaito regardless. But still, I think, yeah. like I'm still not a big fan of what they did with him. I kind of wish he just had not challenged. I wish he had not wrestled Muto, to be honest, either way. But if they end it with Akiyama winning, that's a big match, that's logical, and I can at least understand their thinking if that were to happen.
Let's cut to the chase. Kiyomiya has to beat Muto in a singles match.
I don't know if it's going to happen, though. Like I said,
Me neither. Me neither. But that is what needs to happen. But yeah,
my biggest fear is that some injury pops up down the line when it comes time, and he has to vacate the title, and he never puts over Kiyomiya.
That would be so bad, and very, very likely, actually, with a guy with that history.
He's a great politician. Like, this man talked himself into owning an entire company twice. You know? And one of which he didn't even care about that much. And he still owned it.
Yes, he is the Japanese Jeff Jarrett.
I guess so. That's one way to say it. Hey, he's done the figure four in the past as well. You know, maybe we could, you know. He needs to come out with, like, a With My Baby Tonight type of stuff. I feel like that's his next venture. As you know, remember back in the old days of Noah when they'd have like the sing along videos, like the Christmas videos and stuff. We need a new version of that with the current roster, and then his comes up and he's like wearing a cowboy hat. He rides in on a white stallion with the title and sings a country song of some sort.
Let's just hope that with his injury history, he won't become the king of the mountain now.
Well, you know, like I said, I would hope that they have some end game in mind for this that makes sense. But even if Kaito wins, it's like he still didn't really win because Muto beat him twice. But that would be the only way you could even remotely save face for him. I think it's going to be a big scar if they don't put him over at the end. And I hope that happens. And that, like I said, they can at least save face. The Akiyama idea is good. And I love Akiyama. He'd be a great champion. And I can at least understand their motivations. Because right now, you know, hopefully it works out of business. Like I said, we don't have the numbers with the current era to understand or what they think or what they expect, but hopefully it works out for them.
Right. Let us turn our attention to All Japan Pro Wrestling for a cup of coffee now here. I guess we still think that Jake Lee is going to win the Champion Carnival, right?
I don't see why not. Like, total eclipse, baby.
Total eclipse, baby. Man, what a banger of a theme and what a great group this shapes up to be. Jake Lee, all new gear, very dark gear. They're going with the Total Eclipse theme very much. So I noticed that it's very unfortunate that All Japan really doesn't do any lighting for entrances, because they should really do that for Total Eclipse and their entrance, to put a big spotlight onto them when they come out and have the arena darkened otherwise. But they just don't do that. It's just not in All Japan's DNA to do stuff like that. But I hope that they will turn to this soon to really gain more attention from fans, because it feels like that in comparison to other groups like DDT, Dragon Gate, and Noah, they are losing ground because, yeah, they just
a lot
don't.
Of reasons.
A lot of reasons, but most importantly, it for a lot of times, it feels like that there is a lack of excitement with All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. It does feel like that's been a problem for a while now. It feels like a really dry company. Suwama is champion. It's like, okay, he's pretty good, but not that exciting. Everything's just not that exciting, it feels like. And I think that's why that Jake Lee turn caused such a stir, because it was exciting. You know, that was a huge moment. That was one of their best angles in forever.
Right.
You know, so to me, that was something different, something really cool. Even the stuff with Nextreme, I think, is you know, they're on a good tag title reign and everything, but it doesn't feel like anything that's like, you know, that's like really catching me in my heart and giving me passion for their title reign and their company. It seems like a good thing that's happening, but not that great, not exciting. And now this Jake Lee thing with Total Eclipse, man, we got a total revamp. Things have totally changed for him, the group, and everybody's really into it. And I think it's a great thing, great booking decision on their part. And hopefully with Jake Lee, it seems like everything's perfect now set up for them. Where, you know, 3 months ago, I didn't know who was going to win this Champion Carnival. Even 2 months ago, it's like, man, they've really built up nobody. Remember Zeus last year? He got the big win, match of the year candidate versus Kento. Mm-hmm. And it's like he loses right to Suwama. And it's like, okay. And like, Suwama's fine. And
this time, the title match will be a big, big one, because it's going to be an Ota Watt. So this will be more important than the Zeus one.
True.
We knew that back then that that wouldn't be a important title challenge because they had to reschedule the carnival and all that. But yes, and on top of what you said about Jake Lee, this storyline thing that they did is one of the biggest boss moves you can do in wrestling. A guy stealing a complete group from another guy. That's just a complete dick move.
That is a good way to say it. And not only that, he turned on his friend and longtime partner right away and punked him out in the process. You know, so, yeah, it was a great thing. Opened up a whole new world for Ashino as well. I think he totally benefits from being away. It was a great thing for pretty much everyone. The only thing I have to say, did you watch their 5v5 match they had?
Sure.
I thought that was really disappointing. I wanted to see a lot of hate, you know, like a crazy, out-of-control segment. Instead, it was like, it didn't really do a lot for me, to be honest with you. And I still don't know why Tajiri wasn't there.
Well, he's a booker, of course.
That's the real reason, yes.
It is. But yeah, the match itself, I thought the match itself was good, but I can see what you say about this, that there could have been more hatred in it. But in my opinion, this match was designed to build up Ashino's midsection injury more and more, I thought. Because with this injury, he has this clearly mapped out babyface story for the Champion Carnival, being the underdog in all of his matches. He isn't the tallest either, and now he has two stories, not being the tallest and the injury story to overcome, to come out on top as the top babyface of the promotion in the end. So in my opinion, the match achieved what it wanted to.
That's fair, too. I actually agree with you. When you say that, it sounds a lot better. Because when I watched it, I thought it was pretty disappointing. But what you said actually makes a lot of sense.
Yes. And then we have one more title that is also in the limbo. Maybe in the limbo, we don't know yet. Shima is, of course, the junior heavyweight champion. When he won the title, he said that he's going to bring in the Strong Hearts. But now, Dylan, the Strong Hearts, they have signed with Great. And not only that, we're going to talk about the roster in a bit too. They've signed more guys. But what do you think about the junior title reign? How long lasting is that title reign going to be after the Great deal?
I have no idea the political mechanisms of Great and All Japan right now. But I do know Shima's not to be trusted if you follow his history. So it makes one question why they did that. especially the in Iwamoto's reign. You know, you think that would have been a big win for him, but whatever. Like, you know, the thing is, the junior title is so low on the pecking order in All Japan that it's hard for me to even, like, I totally understand why they would put it on Shima in the first place, like, before all this came out. It makes really perfect sense, honestly. But now, with this Great deal, it throws everything, like you said, kind of in limbo.
The reason I'm asking you is, they signed Ryuichi Kawakami from Big Japan Pro Wrestling. And this signing really got my attention, because this guy for 10 years has been great, and the guy should be in the same conversation as Daisuke Sekimoto and Yuji Kobayashi, but they constantly screw the guy over. He's 32 years old. He's 5'11", 220 pounds in the prime of his career. He's one of the favorite wrestlers that Genichi Tenryu always put on his Tenryu Project shows when he had his final run. And I guess Great, the guys behind Great, they see a lot of potential in him too, because look at him. He's a beast. And the reason that I'm asking this about Shima is that Kawakami and Katsumi Kikuta, they won the Big Japan Tag Team title on January 31st. And then, mysteriously, they just lost it back in their first defense against the Astronauts, the former champions, on February 23rd. And Ryuichi Kawakami was not on the March 8th Big Japan Kuroken Hall show. So this leaves me really believing that this could also happen to the Big Japan Junior title. All Japan Junior title, of course, yes.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when you think about that, it makes sense. It depends on, again, how stringent these great contracts are. I don't really, again, I'm not exactly in the room when they're signing these contracts, but to me, that would make a lot of sense if, you know, they could get him in for a one-and-done type of deal. That seems like it would mess up their plans a little bit for this junior title. I don't think that's what they had in mind originally, but I'm also pretty sure that Shima didn't say, hey, guys, I'm probably going to be signing with Great in a month, so go ahead and put the title on me. You know, I don't think that's how
Shima would do, no.
No, I don't think that's exactly how that happened. So I think they had plans, and like I said, I think it was a logical move. It's just, unfortunately, this contract muddies the water. Maybe they can work it out. Like I said, there's no rule that says, you know, the Great guys cannot work with All Japan, to my knowledge. Like, maybe there is some rule like that we don't know about, but I've not seen much evidence of that so far. So maybe they could just work something out, and, you know, maybe they could even say, hey, look, maybe we could have a title match on Great, which is kind of, remember, they did that last year with Susumu. They had a title match on Dragon Gate. Maybe uh-huh. they could work out something similar with Shima.
Yeah, let's look at the wording of this Kawakami deal from the Big Japan website. We have received a consultation from Great, a new professional wrestling organization operated by Lidit, regarding the reinforcement of their wrestlers for their flag-raising match in July, which is the Hatage. Flag-raising is a bad translation for Hatage, which kind of means starting a new business or raising an army, you could also say.
Yeah, like get off the ground, kind of.
Right. Ryuichi Kawakami will leave Dai Nippon Pro Wrestling at the end of March and join Great on April 1st. This transfer will not be an attempt to cut off communication between the two organizations. We have achieved this transfer in the form of a money trade, which is the way it should be done as a pro sport. This is really unprecedented for Japanese pro wrestling, that they specifically mention that this was a deal that was bought out by another company.
Now, to be fair, this has happened in the past. Remember Stan Hansen back in the old days, and the Tiger Mask gimmick have also been bought from company to company.
That's very true, rare. This was very over rare. 30 years ago.
Yeah, very, very rare. Let's just put it that way. You know, like back in the old days, that did happen before. But like the contract said, or the translation said, I think that that is a good way to do things and a healthy way to operate. It benefits both companies, because Great gets a guy, and I totally agree with you, Kawakami, really good worker. He's impressed me a lot, you know, every time I've seen him, you know, and he's a guy who's been around forever. Like you said, what did you say, about 10 years now?
Yeah. He debuted in 2008, and I think the same year that Okabayashi debuted.
Yeah, and he never was able to get up there, not because he wasn't good enough, but because they didn't book him up to that level. And it benefits Big Japan because they need money. So
they do.
So it helps both people, because they were never going to push him as a main talent to where he could make them money that way. So now you have this way where it seems like it was good for all involved. It doesn't seem like there's any heat between the companies, like saying, oh, you know, like let's just say Kawakami just broke off and left. Mm-hmm. That would probably cause some problems, you know, in Big Japan. They'd be like, oh, no, like you're not allowed here again. Speaking of something that happened 30 years ago, we remember Tenryu in All Japan and how that turned out with Baba. But, you know, this way is very professional, very reminiscent of the European football leagues and stuff.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, see, so I think it's a great way to go. I think that would be a great thing that would benefit a lot of the companies, and this seems like something that Lidit has come up with. And like I said, it has happened before, but not in a long time, and super rare even then. So I think it's a great thing for all involved. It seems like it's a win-win-win. All three parties get to win. Great gets a new talent. Kawakami gets a fresh start. Maybe he could be something now. Big Japan gets money. So that fits everything that you would want in all three cases.
Couldn't have said it any better, and just thinking of the matches that Kawakami could have with the Great roster just as it is right now with Minoru Tanaka or, for example, Takanori Ito, this would be great. These would be great matches from the get-go. And with Lidit being ready to invest money, this gets things going in Japanese wrestling, in my opinion, because that got me thinking, Dylan. Interesting is that they signed the Strong Hearts. They signed Shima, T-Hawk, El Lindemann, and Issei Onitsuka. But interesting is who they didn't sign. Shigehiro Irie. Seems like that this guy wants to remain freelance and wants to work on his own terms and wants to stay, I guess, with All Japan Pro Wrestling. That's my reading here.
logical, I would say, like very logical on your part.
Mm-hmm. And then it got me thinking, who else could they sign? And of course, I asked around on Twitter, and two of the names that got mentioned the most, of course, were Takuya Nomura from Big Japan Pro Wrestling and Fuminori Abe from Pro Wrestling Basara. And one great shout out again to Rob here for mentioning Fuma, because Fuma had his debut in Style E Pro Wrestling, a more shoot style oriented group that was run by Kyosuke Sasaki back in the day, where, for example, Isami Kodaka had a couple of matches too in his early days. So, yeah, great names already listed, Dylan. I have a complete list of names that I want to run down with you, but who would you say that would be a great addition to the great roster?
You know, it's funny, just the other day, before all this came out, I was having a conversation with somebody on Twitter, because I made a comment that I said, because after that horrible Muto match, I was like, man, I wish Yuki Ishikawa was the old guy that became champion for Battle Arts. Like, that's what
I love that.
That's what I want for Noah. Yuki Ishikawa to return to be champion. And suddenly, me and this person, I want to shout her out. At Ashley Perez on Twitter, Pure Risu, to spell it out. We were having this conversation about who we would want and how we were fantasy booking this shoot style promotion. And I was thinking, and so it's kind of crazy we had that conversation right before all this happened. I think that a lot of people would be happy with a lot of the guys that you're going to say. I don't know who they are, but I have a good idea of who you like. So I have some estimations on there. She was saying people like, you know, Otani, Nakajima, Jake Lee, and all of that. And some other people jumped in saying Yuya Aoki. Mm-hmm. I think he was great. My picks were guys like, my first one was Hikaru Sato from sure. All Japan.
That's why I didn't have him on my list, because I knew that you would mention him.
One of my favorites, wherever he goes, whatever style of wrestling he does, but I think he would fit like a hand in glove with great. Abe was one of my first people. Like you said, a lot of people said him, so that's nothing crazy. Sugira, Harada, and Inamura from Noah, I think would be great additions. If obviously, they're not going to buy out Sugira's contract or anything, but I think they would be great guests to have. DDT Okada, I think, is just an awesome guy that would do great at that too if they could get him in. Yukio as well. Keisuke Okuda from Dragon Gate. And Kanemoto and Otani could come in to reform their team with Minoru Tanaka and have six-man matches in the great world, as well as on their own. So those are the guys that I think of. He's Yukata too, actually. He's a former Battle Arts guy.
Yeah,
and
right.
He's working some All Japan runs. If he could get into great, I think he'd do a great job. No pun intended. I'm there.
But very
I think
intended.
Now it's intended. Everything is great now, but like I think he'd be a perfect person for that as well. But there's a lot of guys out there, so I'm interested to see who you picked.
First of all, I think that a promotion like this needs some grimy veterans on their roster. You already mentioned Yuki Ishikawa, so I want to counter this with Daisuke Ikeda. That could be a great signing for them. Another shoot style background.
If they wrestle each other, yes.
Oh, yeah. More veterans that I have: Osamu Nishimura, Tatsuya Takaiwa, Mitsuya Nagai, and Super Tiger.
Okay, let me stop you with those four. I think that those are great ideas, first of all. All of them with former experience. I love the Nishimura shout out too. Muga is back in 2021, baby.
Dude, I really loved how he wrestled in this match on the All Japan show, this prelude to the Triple Crown, where he teamed with Yoshitatsu. I thought he was the best guy in the match.
I say that too. Like, he honestly is one of my favorite workers of that era, because he was in New Japan during the like Inoki era, like the mm-hmm. you know the 2000s, and he was one of my favorite guys. I think he was legitimately one of the best workers of that whole time.
I remember that he once came to Germany and had a match in Hannover, and most of the fans didn't know him, and most of them said, "Who is this boring Japanese guy?" And I remember how furious I was back then.
Ignore those people. Surely you did not even look at them after they said that. But yeah, like, great technical worker, perfect fit. Another guy that I would love. The guy, I have to say, when he was in Noah the last time, it shattered my memories of him almost. What were they called? The hooligans. That was a horrible run. In his prime, though, he has rings experience, and he was a really good worker. I think he might be a little too grimy and old for great. Who were the other two you said?
Super Tiger and Takaiwa.
Takaiwa, of course. Takaiwa, awesome pick. Totally fits in with my Kanemoto and Otani and Minoru Tanaka. They're all a faction now. They're all fighting Strong Hearts. Four versus four. The old New Japan Shooters versus the Strong Hearts. Yeah, excellent feud there. So, and he's awesome. Like, just a guy, he has three moves. All of them are devastating. Powerbomb, Death Valley Driver, and Lariat.
What? Do you need any more? I don't know. You don't need nothing more.
Absolutely not. That's a great pick, very along the lines of what I had in mind as well. And Super Tiger, I think he'd be better here than, you know, he had some brief runs here and there with, like, All Japan that Zero time. One. Yeah, 0-1 as well. I think he was better in Battle Art style than in pro style. So if they put him in the UWF division, that's another thing we have to mention. They've separated the divisions between regular pro wrestling and UWF style. So he would be great for the UWF division, I think.
He would be, and that's why the signings are pretty open right now, because they are really signing guys for their pro wrestling division in it seems like all styles, just when you look at the Strong Hearts. And I got a list of a few other names, first going to the independents. That's a conversation that I had a couple of days ago on Twitter, actually. Isaac was part of the conversation, and I can't remember the other one who was, but shout out to you, because you mentioned Hitamaru Sasaki from Kyushu Pro Wrestling. He had a match against Koji Kanemoto a couple of months ago, and he's a really great guy, very good technical guy, too. So I could see him being a great addition to this roster, a fairly unknown guy. And another fairly unknown guy, Shunsuke Sayama, who is right now one of
really
the
good.
Top guys of Total Triumph Team. Yep, really good guy. And of course, you can always go to the staples of the independence in Japan with the guys like Masashi Takeda, of course. And I also thought of Tatsuhiko Yoshino, because you mentioned it on your show with Rob, how he got buried in Big Japan Pro Wrestling by Isami Kodaka.
Sad. I hated that match.
It was an awful match. And then I went to DDT, of course, too. The first guy I thought of, they are not going to let him go, but Katsusada Higuchi would be a great addition with his sumo background.
The thing is, we don't know, like kind of like the guys I said, we don't know how open they are and how open other companies are to doing that. So if that were possible, like, they're not going to sign him. But to have Higuchi in for a match, you know, you never know. Like, one day they might do something like that. That would be great, I think, too, for everybody involved to do something different. You know, like, that's something that's been needed in Japanese wrestling. Like, to me, a lot of these indie companies aren't very interesting because they're just lower rent versions of stuff we already have. Mm-hmm. Like, great. Is something different. Like,
it's
now,
fresh.
Yeah, exactly. Like, with this UWF style. So now, instead of going somewhere and either doing goofy comedy or a less efforted version of something you'd see in a bigger company, now you have a good, like, something totally different that's really good for you as a wrestler. So I think that they have more interest in terms of other companies working together. I mean, we don't know politically, but in terms of just from a wrestling standpoint, they would have a lot more interest for me if I ran one of these big companies of letting my guys go over than a, you know, even a 0-1. Like, you know, like that to me is like, you're not doing anything different than we see in other places. UWF style, you could get something different out of that.
And on the topic of a new fresh coat of paint, I think that a guy like Masata Kanashi could really be great here too. Akito as well, but he's now part of the office in DDT, so that's not going to happen. Then, of course, shout out to Sven. He mentioned Keisuke Ishii and Ryota Nakatsu. Keisuke Ishii is always on my list, of course. I have to mention him in any situation where he gets a fresh coat of paint, because I really want this. Ryota Nakatsu too. He kind of lost what he once had in DNA after he transferred over to Basara.
He's another guy that's really good. I completely agree with that. Like, he's a super underrated and underutilized talent.
Yes, so that's basically my list of guys.
Yeah, like all of those are really good. I especially like Sayama and Nakatsu because I think they're younger guys that would add something to the promotion. You know, there's a lot of guys out there, though, like that, you know, have style. Like even guys like Hagane Shino, Kengo Mashimo,
oh, yeah,
they had matches in Futen, well, you know, but before, and so they have that style experience too. You know, they should just go down that roster. You have guys like Masayuki Kono out there, wherever he is. It seems like, you know,
Vamos Star.
Yeah, of course, Vamos Star. Yes, Daisuke Kanahira, I think, would be great. You mm-hmm. know, they have guys like that that are super like low key, you know, heat up type of people.
Yeah, they signed Chiwisuka from Heat Up.
Yeah, see, go from there. Yeah, I this is what inspired that comment, was I was looking stuff up, and I saw that Yujiro Yamamoto had a match at Heat Up last month, mm-hmm. and I was like, man, I remember when he was the jam in Battle Arts. So, like, if somebody like that's still around, you know, you could get guys with experience there. I think that would help. If you have guys that have experience in shoot style, kind of like with, like you were saying with Nagai, with the rings, and Super Tiger with Battle Arts. Like
they
do have
signed Daijo Matsuri.
Yeah, what about Keita in the house?
Yeah, he's still around, of course.
See, wow. That's what I said on the thing. It's like everybody only knows him because of the name, but in reality, he was actually good at Battle Arts a long, long time ago. You know, like 10, 11, 12, 13, however many years ago. And I think if they have the money, I think there is one company that we know needs a lot of money. They're on hard times right now. You know, like this whole era of, you know, the fans and the virus and all that has really hurt them. And I think that company, I think you know who I'm talking about, String.
Do I? There's actually a lot of companies that could need help, so help me out here.
WWE, of course. Hideki Suzuki. They need to buy his contract out. Wherever he flew to, bring him back in. Bring it back into the fold. We need this great. You're the only company, Ledet. You're the only people that I could trust with this. Buy out his contract. He's not going to do anything. I don't want to see him hanging around with Jiro and catering. I need him to come back to great and be the top star of the promotion and wrestle many, many people in UWF style. That's what we need for great. That's my dream, is that they buy out the contract. They've overstepped even Vince McMahon and his desire to sign Hideki Suzuki. However that happened, they oversign him and they sign Hideki.
So how about this? Since they mentioned on their first show that Josh Barnett will be coming into the country as soon as he can, how about Great versus Bloodsport? How about Super Beast coming to Japan and being the new foreign threat in Japanese wrestling, and Super Beast in the end being beaten by Takanori Ito becomes the new ace of Great?
I mean, if there's not a bigger big dick energy move than beating Super Beast, I don't know what it is. So I think that's another of your brilliant ideas, a Stringer, for this. And surely they will become the biggest company in Japan if they do that.
Sure.
But I'm happy to see Barnett come in. I really respect that guy, and I'm a fan of his work too. So I love seeing him in there. And hopefully he does some good things, some great things, even, in great, as you would say.
Great stuff all around, Dylan. So you, the listener, please let us know what your roster ideas, what your booking ideas are for great. What do you see coming? Which guys do you see coming in? What do you want to see? What kind of titles do you want to see? That's another question, Dylan, because this is the championship edition of Eastern Lariat. Since Great has been making so much noise lately, I feel like that they also want to do something different in their title scene too. So maybe get a shoot style title and a pro heavyweight title of sorts, but just don't do the regular thing as all the promotions do.
They need to get the NWA title that Lou Thesz had.
Oh, that would be so great.
Yeah, that's what UWFI did, by the way. They totally lifted from them. But get a super old school belt, or maybe they could do it like the JWA belt that like Ricky Dozon has or something, and bring it back for like the great title.
I'm just thinking, because Ricky Choshu is on the roster. Is there probably some belt that Choshu still has that they could use?
They have to lie about it and say it was around, like, in the 1940s.
Yeah. if Kendo Kashin did with the National
Yes. Guy. Yes, exactly. So, see, I didn't hate that match as much as most people. I don't think you did either, the Kendo Kashin run in NOAH. So we're back on the Kashin train, baby. A gimmick from 5 years ago.
Whatever happened with the WWF International Heavyweight title? Riku Choshu had the title once, and then Fujinami had it until 85, and then the title was not fought out anymore.
I mean, where did it go? Like, this is one thing we need to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what they need to do. Find Ryoji Sai and pay him for the All-Asia title, which I think actually was the title that Riki Dozan had.
It was.
Yeah, exactly. So they need to find Ryoji Sai, pay him for the title. Lands In doesn't need it. He always likes money. Like Ryoji Sai working again makes a ton of money for the title. Bring it into great, and that will be the title. That is the dream scenario.
Mm-hmm. Ryoji Sai and his promotion. Kotaro Nasu, by the way, is another guy that could be used in great as well, because apparently this thing that he had with Lance End didn't really work out.
Yeah. Like I say, Lance End is a gimmick all of it. You know, we could have a whole episode on Lance End, I'm sure.
Maybe.
Where's Manabu Hara? Bring him in.
Oh, Jesus Christ, yes.
Yeah.
There's so many guys that are kind of lost in the last couple of years. Yeah, at the time. Absolutely. Well, Dylan, that's it. That's all I have.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good show, a good smorgasbord of stuff in wrestling.
Love it.
Yeah, but hopefully everybody enjoyed it. It was so good to be back with you. If you don't mind, though, I actually would like to speak on something real quick.
Of course.
Yeah, so something kind of serious, actually. So I didn't want to start the show off with this because it would be kind of awkward to transition. But as we're recording this, last night, there was a huge gun violence attack in Georgia, where we're at, and it was an anti-Asian attack, actually. In fact, like six of the women, or there were seven women and one guy, and like six of them were Asian. It was like a massage parlor spree this freaking lunatic went on. There were some Facebook posts they dug up, and they were saying some crazy, like really nasty stuff, you know, this shooter, so to speak. And I was really disheartened by it, you know. This is something that's been on my mind a lot lately, because there's been a real rise in anti-Asian.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago, too, privately. And
yeah.
Since the Asian community in Germany is not as big, I really didn't come across any of this before you actually pointed to it, but I've since come across this hashtag that's going on Twitter for the last couple of weeks, and just of course today it has risen up due to this very tragic situation.
Yeah, just sickening stuff. Like people are dead. Eight people are dead right now for no reason. Like, you know, like totally senseless act of violence right now. And like, you've already got guys, you know, like I just wanted to speak on this, and like I said, I'm not trying to be political or anything like that, but I come on here today. Like I said, when that happened last night, I was super shook up by it, you know. Obviously, I'm Asian American myself, and I have many friends that are Asian American. We have a whole group, and we're going to have a meeting where I'm from. We talk about all kinds of stuff. It's a good vibe, usually, but I was really shooken up by the whole thing, to be honest with you. And I come on here today, I come on here at Twitter, and I see the person that arrested this guy, the cop or whatever, he comes here and he says, oh, well, it was a really bad day for this guy, and he killed people because of it. And it's like, man, this guy is a murderer, a guy who killed a bunch of people, and is a criminal, and should be treated as such. And I feel like that's totally unfair that that's the reaction that this murderer gets after he just assassinated a bunch of innocent people for no reason. Like, literally no reason, or just crazy madman reasons that I don't even want to think about. So I was really disgusted by this whole thing. And like you said, you know, this is something I talked to you about a few weeks ago, actually, and, you know, we were talking about it privately, because the thing that I saw that set me off on this was that I put the hashtag on my profile as well, and it's on every post I make, because, you know, it's important. And I think that the thing that set me off was that shows you these racists and these killers and these assholes out there. That shows you how gutless and spineless and cowardly they are, because they attack a 91-year-old man, you know. And this guy here, you see him on Facebook. He's ranting about China and how they brought the virus everywhere and they're the evil of the world. And then he comes in here and he kills a bunch of Korean people. Like, these guys, they don't even know the difference. They'll attack Filipinos, Vietnamese, Thai, Chinese, Japanese. It doesn't matter. Wherever you're from, they don't even know the difference. That's how ignorant these guys are. So when I see this, I'm just so disgusted, and I would like to take the time to announce that, you know, we're going to be doing something with our Patreon mm-hmm. for the next couple of months. And at the end of May, like May 31st, the end of Asian American History Month, it's not that publicized, but, you know, I saw it on there, and I thought it was really special and important. Anybody who signs up to our Patreon, every bit of it is going to Asian American charities in America. I've got a few links that I'm going to post on Twitter later for that. That, you know, if you want to support, you can do that. It's like charity, but I give you some free stuff too with the Patreon as well. You know, trying to do our part for that and helping out the people. I've got some shirts I'm going to design. All the profits of that will go to charities as well. So that's something I want to stand up for, and I really hope that everybody out there takes some time, because, like I said, you know, I was telling Striga this, that, you know, never mind just me, but this show was about Japanese wrestling, obviously. So I feel like it was a handy glove fit to really step out in front of this. And, you know, remember when everything was happening last year with a lot of, you know, the George Floyd situation? We were out here saying Black Lives Matter, too. You know, me and you both were here. And this is just as important when you see this kind of senseless violence, racism and stuff. I've encountered a little bit of it myself, not anything at this level, obviously. But it's something very important to me. So all that money is going to charity for the next couple of months. If anybody signs up now, you get the rest of March. You get everything on New Japan Cup. Like I said, I'm not trying to, like, you know, swindle you guys or anything. But I think it would be really cool if you did sign up so we could have a nice donation to them in everybody's name. And the shirts, I put some work into that too. Hopefully you guys like them. I'll post those in a little bit as well. But that's just something I wanted to speak on before we end the show. Like I said, it would have been kind of awkward to talk about it at first, because then we'd have to jump on to other things. But this really got to me last night, Strig.
Yeah, I can totally understand. And
yeah. So you thank know, you for letting me speak out on that, and you know, thank you for that.
Of course I would. I'm not always the best when it comes to choosing my wording, and I'm the first to admit, but we've been talking about this a lot in recent years, actually, too, that words will eventually lead to actions. And this is one of the cases, one of the very tragic and unfortunate cases where that really happened, where a environment of bad words and bad prejudices in the end led to someone taking action. And in the end, it's completely insane how the cop treated this guy. It's almost laughable if the situation wasn't as bad. So, as you said, Dylan, all the benefits will go to charities to really raise awareness of this and to better the climate. Definitely it needs to be addressed, and all these charities, or the charity that you choose, will definitely do that. So please subscribe to our Patreon.
Yeah, absolutely. Just do your best to support. Even just some kind words can go a long way. Use your voices to stand up to this, because to me there's no, like, there's no room for this kind of crap right now, you know, like senseless violence, as I said. And like I said, you know, you might be saying, you know, like, even if you're of a political view or whatever, like, that doesn't matter. This is ridiculous. And like I said, this racism knows no bounds with the Asian community. Like, it's not just Dylan, the Chinese American. There's also, like I said, they don't even care. It's any kind of Asian American and any kind of minority or whatever you want to call them. It's just, it feels like we're under attack right now. So I hope you guys can stand up for that in your own way. Like I said, help us out. We'd really appreciate it. I know Striga totally feels the same way, and I'm very proud to be with somebody like that that supports these causes too. So hopefully everybody checks that out and can stay tuned for all the good stuff there. Like I said, I'm not going to like beat everybody over the head with it or anything, but I wanted to say it now, and you know, in the future we'll kind of give it shout outs and plugs. Like I said, we're not like heavy handed with the Patreon or anything. We're not like begging people to do it, but right now I think it's for a good cause, a better cause for the next couple of months. I said at the end of May, well, beginning of June, probably the first day or two of June, I will make that donation proudly for all of our supporters and all the Eastern Lariat family, and hopefully we can come together for something we enjoy so much in Japanese wrestling and all the good people of America that are suffering right now. And I just want to say, too, my heart is with the family of all eight of those people that suffered last night, you know, because of this tragic just insanity that this guy, I don't even know what words to call it without saying something really mean, to say the least.
It's a hate crime.
Yeah, it absolutely is. This is a hate crime from a murderer, terrorist individual doing some crazy stuff right now that I couldn't believe it when I saw it, that it got this crazy. You know, I looked at the statistic right now. I looked it up last night, but I see it right now. There's over 3,800 incidents that have been reported of anti-Asian American hate crimes in America in the last year, from March 2020 to March 2021. So that to me is just astounding, and that's the ones that have been reported. There's many, many more that haven't been. Many people don't want to speak up.
Yes.
And, hopefully we can use our voices for something good and positive in this world, in this country, and everything involved with that. So thank you to everybody. Like, genuinely, I'll say it again in the future, but genuinely to everybody who supports, thank you so much for helping us and being a great part of the Eastern Lariat family that I love with all my heart, you know, truly, like for this and many other reasons. So thank you so much for that, Strig, and to the listeners.
I can't add any more to this but to wholeheartedly agree. And I want to thank you all for listening to this show. This has been the Eastern Lariat. Goodbye.
Sayonara.
MLWRadio.com network.